Hey guys, and welcome to the fifth underrated minisode. I'm your host, Gabriel Green, and I'm here with my co-host, James Hamrick. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. I'm ready to talk about this, especially after just having seen Rogue One for the third time, and A New Hope right after that. I'm ready to talk about Star Wars.
Yeah, me too. All right, so we do these minisodes so we can kind of get into the fun of talking about films that don't necessarily fall into the underrated mold. And so today we're going to be looking at Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So with Rogue One coming out, it's kind of brought all the people who hated The Force Awakens out of the woodwork, and everyone seems to want to compare the two and talk about how Rogue One is so much better than The Force Awakens. And so we decided to go back and take a look at it and see if it holds up. So let's get right into it. Star Wars The Force Awakens was released in 2015. It was directed by J.J. Abrams on a budget of $245 million, and it grossed $2 billion. That's crazy right there. It stars Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Adam Driver, Harrison Ford, Oscar Isaacs. Is Isaacs or Isaac?
Well, I was literally going to ask you the same thing because I always forget whether there's an S on the end.
Yeah. Carrie Fisher, Domhnall Gleeson, Lupita Nyong'o, Andy Serkis, Peter Mayhew, Anthony Daniels, and Max von Sydow. And it was written by Lawrence Kasdan, J.J. Abrams, and Michael Arndt. And the score was composed by the one and only John Williams. But before we go on, we really should mention the passing of Carrie Fisher. And that was a real shock. She's not terribly old, and definitely a huge bummer, and especially coming right on the release of Rogue One.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. You know, we've got all these older actors that are, you know, slowly passing away. And unfortunately, towards the end of 2016, I was just kind of waiting to see who the next one was. And then for it to be Carrie Fisher was incredibly unexpected. I mean, obviously, as a Star Wars fan, it's really, really sad to know that. One, just as a movie fan, to know that there's now no chance to see her in Episode 9, unless they CGI, which I desperately hope they don't.
Yeah.
I don't think that'd be a good way of remembering her.
They say that she wrapped all her footage for Episode 8, so I'm hoping they find a kind of organic way to write her character out, rather than have to, yeah, as you said, the CGI character. It works sometimes, but it's too soon for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole issue is kind of a lot sadder because her mother, Debbie Reynolds, also passed away a day later. So definitely our thoughts are with the family.
And yeah, just some great, great icons we lost.
Yeah, it's crazy you think about her. She didn't have all that many movie roles, but she took the role of Leia and just made it her own. Like you think about A New Hope, her acting wasn't great in that movie, but she had kind of a charisma and screen presence that made even that film, like her character in that film, iconic, even in spite of some of the wonky acting there.
Yeah, and then some of that may have been, she had some cheesy lines she had to deliver as well, but I think she did really well, and especially in, you know, Empire Strikes Back and going forward, and she really came into her own with that character.
Yeah, definitely a very iconic character, and she will be missed. All right, moving on from that. I'm going to let you start out here, James. So does this film hold up without all the hype surrounding its release, or is it just kind of a lazy ripoff of A New Hope?
I don't think there's really anything lazy about it, except for maybe the climax. I watched this movie, and it wasn't this grand thing that I wanted. It didn't introduce all this crazy new stuff. And so, again, it was another one where, like The Hobbit, I kind of walked out just slightly disappointed the first time. And I never saw it again in the theaters. But, I mean, I knew I was going to buy it on Blu-ray. So I bought it on Blu-ray when it came out. And every viewing again, it grows on me to where I think it's probably my second favorite just behind Empire Strikes Back now. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, in terms of filmmaking, one of the best movies in the whole series.
Yeah, I was also kind of disappointed at some of the plotting choices when I first walked out. But then I went on and saw it again. And I was like, man, this movie is really fun. And then I just ended up seeing it four times total, and every time coming out, like, this movie is incredible. So I definitely think it holds up. And I watched it again recently, and everything that worked for me back in last December, I think still works just as well. Even outside all of the hype of its release and with all the negative criticisms. All right. So I guess to start out with the things I love about this movie, I have to go with the cast. The cast of the original Star Wars is rightfully iconic, but I think this one might be even a bit better. Just because with this trilogy, you don't have to go through the awkward growing pains of some of the actors had in A New Hope. Right off the bat here, they are giving fantastic, very, very layered performances of characters that I think are some of the best written characters we've had in this entire series. The John Boyega, Daisy Ridley, and Harrison Ford coming back, giving, I think, one of his best performances in the series, or possibly his best performance in this series. I think the range Harrison Ford gets to give in here, from kind of, you know, the grumpy old curmudgeon to the really great humor to some really solid dramatic scenes towards the end. I'm just going to call spoiler alerts. If you haven't seen this film, I can't imagine why you'd be listening to this episode if you haven't, but go watch it if you haven't. So just definitely the whole cast is so good.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not a weak link. And I mean, I had the exact same reason why I started loving it is because this cast is just awesome. Daisy Ridley is a fantastic new lead. Because that's the thing, when you're starting a new trilogy, you're going to have a new lead. And so, to me, it's, like you said, the trio of the first trilogy is so iconic. It's like, how can you live up to that? And I am incredibly happy to see Daisy Ridley and John Boyega like leading this new trilogy going forward. I think there's a lot of cool places they could take these characters. Daisy Ridley is not a what's the term I'm thinking of?
Mary Sue.
Yeah. Daisy Ridley is not a Mary Sue.
Well, actually, let's talk about that real quick. What is a Mary Sue for those who don't know?
It is a female character who is essentially flawless and perfect in everything, and really, ultimately, that makes her not relatable.
And she isn't?
And she isn't because, one, her flaw is that she's clinging on to this idea that she can go back, that her parents are still out there, that she doesn't have to go on this journey. She's the reluctant hero, and I really don't think you can call a reluctant hero like this perfect person, because clearly they're fighting against something that is inevitable. We all know she's going to end up becoming the protagonist. I mean, is she good at things? Yes, but I mean, so was
Luke, yeah.
Yeah.
And Anakin.
And exactly. Anakin was pod racing, something that they said not only humans typically can never do, but now an 8-year-old human?
Mm-hmm.
And then Luke, you know, after a presumably 5-minute training in the Force, is blocking the training blaster
mm-hmm.
with no vision.
And so, that includes everything he does in Empire Strikes Back. Even then he had no training. It would all have been him experimenting on his own.
Yeah, so I don't know. It just seemed to me, at least, people fishing for something to complain about. So
they give explanations within story for her abilities. Like, for example, she's basically a mechanic by trade because she has to tear apart machines and find the valuable pieces. She knows all that. She knows how to stick fight, so that explains the lightsaber fighting and the film states that she is a prodigy in the Force. We don't know. I mean, it's not like that's unprecedented. This whole series has been about Force prodigies. Every trilogy has had their own person who is there to bring balance to the Force. It's not like it's unprecedented. It's what this series is about.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the movie's called The Force Awakens. We're told that something in the Force has been awakened. So who's to know? Maybe the Force is even stronger now than ever. Like, Episode 8 may provide answers on things we didn't even know that we were asked, questions that we didn't even know we had yet.
Yeah, there might be even more midichlorians. What do you know?
Exactly. That count could be way up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one thing that makes this film shine so much is J.J. Abrams, the director. I'm just going to say it. I think J.J. Abrams is probably the best action director working today. And I know I'm going to get a lot of people make fun of me for that, but whatever. When you watch his films, I think it's easy with action films to kind of turn your brain off and not pay attention to the craft. But just the way he crafts action scenes, the way he always keeps the focus of every scene on character, and every action scene in all of his films builds character. It tells us something new about the character. It gives us a new dimension. And he uses action to give exposition in ways like no other. For example, the scene with Finn, Rey, and BB-8 in the Millennium Falcon when the leak springs. Instead of just having a boring dialogue scene, he has this scene that gives us both exposition and character motivations. That it's set around this comedic scene of her trying to fix the thing and telling him, no, not that tool, that tool. And it's kind of a situation we all know, and it's really funny. But he uses it to give exposition of where's the Rebel base. He also tells us about Rey's character, how she thinks she has to go back to Jakku. You have a little bit of flirting on Finn's part. It's just there's so much going on in that scene that reveals who these characters are, while giving us exposition of the larger story, and also giving BB-8 more personality than just about any character in the prequels in that scene alone. And that is done over a 2-minute scene that involves action. He uses the action scenes and to get around awkward exposition, just to expand the story in a way that keeps the viewer engaged. And I don't think people give him enough credit for how he does that. And he keeps it always humorous and funny and engaging in a way that it's just such a joy to watch if you're paying attention.
Yeah, I think if you were to look at his action scenes, it's almost impossible to pick apart every shot. Like, I mean, just following the Millennium Falcon through that spaceship graveyard is some of the greatest shots in this entire 8-movie series now.
Yeah.
They are some impressive, cool camera angles that we're just following on its tail, especially like the one they used in the initial teaser. It's just I remember seeing that teaser for the first time. It was an event for me. My brother texted me, said the teaser's been released, and I rushed home from class and I put that on, and I just sat in anticipation. And when we saw the Millennium Falcon rise up to the sky and the camera just kind of followed it over that loop, it was amazing, and it got me excited to see where he was going to take some of these space battles. And I think when the Resistance flies in towards the end, after they leave the cantina, and we see Poe for the first time really fly, that one long tracking shot of just him taking out all of the TIE fighters, it's like a...
While also following Finn on the ground, it's all in one shot.
Yeah, we're keeping check on two different characters in one shot, and both characters are doing something interesting, and yet we don't really feel lost in what's going on. Like, it takes somebody who knows a camera and knows how to work it in with a story to really make something like that work.
Yeah, and any director, or most directors, can make a fairly decent CGI action scene. But what really counts for the director is when you have live action. And the live action scenes in this film are breathtaking. As you said, the attack on Jakku, just the long tracking shots, like with Finn running to his ship, or just all throughout, we are given just beautiful shots. Every shot leads into the next one. There's no wasted shots. The editing is seamless. Every scene has a purpose. It advances the story. Every beat has its place. And it makes the action scenes like just breathless. And I love how using the bloody hand on Finn's helmet to distinguish him for the rest of the scene. And just how he stands there, he hesitates in everything he does. We know right there so much about his character. Just even while he's in a suit, we've never seen his face. Just how Abrams choreographs these scenes. Another shot at the Maz Kanata's, I forget what the place is called, her cantina thing, is when Rey is being brought onto the ship. And Finn, he starts running, and the camera kind of tracks alongside him for over 100 feet, and then kind of swings around in front of him and stops right in his face as he screams her name as the ship's flying away. It's just really beautiful, graceful shots like that that make all the action scenes stand out in this film.
Yeah, and I think they're helped out because the special effects of this movie are incredible.
Yeah.
They definitely... learned the right lesson from the prequels, and that maybe a movie that's not shot entirely in front of a green screen would be better. So, I mean, really, one of my favorite things about this movie is it looks like what I think a modern Star Wars movie should look like. Like, the X-Wings look like X-Wings, but they look real, unlike how they would in several of the shots from the original trilogy. So it doesn't feel disconnected. Stylistically, everything looks the same. It just looks like it's brought to life in a far more realistic way. So it's, in just the way this movie presents itself, it's exactly what I think a modern Star Wars movie should look and feel like.
Yeah, the budget's definitely on the screen. They built these sets, and they just filled it with detail. And every set looks real. It looks like a place you could actually visit. And it's all very great looking. Do you have a positive you want to mention?
Yeah, since this is a mini-sode, it's a little less structured. I kind of wanted to go back to the cast for just a little bit. You know, we've talked about our main two leads, Daisy Ridley and John Boyega. They both are perfect to carry this. But honestly, I think the person who may be my favorite character has a lot less screen time than them, but that is Oscar Isaac as Poe. I think that he instantly became one of the most likable characters in any movie ever. And he's
got,
like,
I talk first?
Yeah, just his... I mean, that's probably just because Oscar Isaac is one of my favorite working actors right now. Especially having just seen him in Ex Machina. And I loved him in Drive. He made a character who really on paper I shouldn't like.
He's in
like.
Drive?
Yeah.
Ah,
and he's,
now I have to watch that.
Yeah, and he's amazing in it. It's another like really subtle performance, but he does emotion incredibly well. Like he's never does anything halfway. And so every scene he's in, he makes the absolute most of.
Yeah.
And I don't know, one of the scenes that we both love is the escape from the Star Destroyer with him and Finn. Because John Boyega and Oscar Isaac are both so good, they're able to create such a real feeling chemistry between those two characters, and that's one of the most exciting sequences in any of the series, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just the camaraderie that those two characters have and that short period of time. I remember taking like almost a mental note of that the first time I saw it in the theater, thinking, this guy has been on screen for probably a total of like 3 minutes, and yet I'm already completely on board with what's going on right now. And I was laughing at some of their lines. Like, it was just the whole sequence from start to finish was incredibly well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's it's definitely credit to the actors, but I think this is another thing Abrams does really well. You can see it, especially in his Star Trek films. He knows how to craft a great chemistry between his actors and just make, as I said before, simple dialogue scenes exciting. Just when Finn first pulls up Poe out and he pulls him into the closet or whatever, and he's talking about how it's like, why are you doing this? He's like, because it's the right thing to do. You need a pilot. Like, yeah, I need a pilot.
We're gonna do this. Like, we're gonna do this.
Yeah, he's like completely panicking, and they're you can tell they're having so much fun together, and I think they craft one of the best bromances ever seen on film in like 3 minutes of screen time, and to where you completely buy when they get together towards the middle of the film, and there's like, oh, you got my jacket, like, oh yeah, sorry,
it's just, you keep it, looks good, yeah. On you right there. I was like, oh man, Poe is just the best.
Yeah, Poe is such a wonderful human being. I would love to just hang out with him, just because how. I love how he just subtly humanizes Finn. And like, he asks him his name, he gives him his number, he's like, I'm not calling you that. And just gives him a name. Like, you like that name? He's like, yeah. And just the excitement in Finn's demeanor when he gets his name. Kind of this little bit of individuality he hasn't been allowed. There's so much humanity and just character development in this action beat. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think if I were to ever move to a new place where I knew nobody, I would want Poe Dameron to be the first person I met, because he's just amazing. The two other people that I wanted to talk about that I liked a lot, first was Domhnall Gleeson as General Hux. He doesn't get a whole lot to do in this movie, but I love his kind of villains. I talked about, he falls into the same category that I put Krennic in, where it's like it's the more bureaucratic side of the Star Wars villains.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it when they continue to add these kind of villains, because I think they're sometimes just as much fun as like the Sith.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really liked was that, and it's what Rogue One did as well, where there's like infighting within the bad guys, and so some of the lines that he exchanges with Kylo Ren are really good. Like whenever he's defending his stormtroopers, and Kylo Ren says, "Well, they've proved to be exceptionally well at high treason." Just hearing them go back and forth is really fun, and I think
what's funny about that scene is it starts off with Kylo Ren is trying to get Kylo Ren is trying to get Hux to not destroy the droid, and Hux is like, "Well, we have orders; we can destroy." He's like, "Well, I guess yeah, your men aren't that great." He's like, "Well, my men are the best." He's like, "Oh well, then you can get the droid, not destroy it." It's just a really funny dialogue scene in amidst all this this kind of infighting.
Yeah, I think my favorite scene from his character is his speech that he gives before they fire the Starkiller base. It's the passion behind his eyes as he's giving that. And as we see the tear, like Hux became a genuine character, I think, in that moment. And
yeah.
I really look forward to seeing where they take that character.
Yeah, I think his whole research was watching a couple of videos of Hitler giving his speeches. Here, there's your research. Go home and watch that, and then come back and recreate that.
Yeah, I mean, that falls in line with what Lucas did with the villains initially.
Yep.
And the other person that I just have to mention, because this is another character when criticized, I just get so angry. That's Adam Driver as Kylo Ren. I think that he is easily one of the best villains of this series. The Emperor is actually my personal favorite. I know most people choose Darth Vader, but even classifying him as a villain, because like, yeah, he played a villain for the most part, but that's ultimately not his end role. He ends up, you know, being redeemed. But even if you count him as a villain, he had the really cool presence, but he wasn't the orchestrator of any of the big events. So the Emperor's my favorite, but maybe Darth Vader edges Kylo out, but that's because Kylo only has one movie so far. But what we got from this first movie was far more than what Vader gave us with just A New Hope. As great as his on-screen presence was, Kylo is infinitely more layered and complex.
Yeah.
He's got some of the, I think of all the characters, he may have been given the most depth. This idea that he wants to be this great villain like his grandfather, but he has the light side calling to him. Because usually, it's almost the reverse of what Anakin was. Anakin wanted to be good as best as he could. Like, he had a desire to be a good person, but the dark side was calling to him. Kylo wants to be, like, this feared villain that everybody, you know, will remember. But he's being called to by the light side. And so we see, the reverse of this, you know, where they go forward, whether the Force is essentially the way it was calling to him is cut off with him killing Han. I'm not sure. I know some people think that he's going to become full villain with no call to the light. But, I mean, if that's so, even still, I think they could continue to make this character one of the best villains. And I think ultimately all that cool stuff going on with the character works because Adam Driver is such a good actor.
Yeah. Well, one thing I really noticed this time is that when you watch how he interacts with his mask off, you can see he's actually a fairly empathetic person, and he's not cruel by nature. Like, the actions he takes are very calculated to make himself more evil. He does like random acts of like just horrible things throughout, just to make him to try to buff himself up and solidify his status as an evil person, but he's still, you can tell he's conflicted about those. And like the scene where he's talking to Rey, there is so much sadness and empathy in his performance and how he genuinely, he understands her. And he's almost comforting her in the midst of invading her mind. It's a really creepy scene, but he brings so many layers to how he acts that scene out. And you can see he's not really cruel. He's more, it's a very interesting performance. And like I love and just the similar with the scene with his father, or with Han Solo at the end when he, spoilers, kills Han Solo. He's not taking any pleasure out of it. He's just kind of, he's doing it because he thinks it's what he has to do. And you see he's just as miserable afterwards. And I think some of the rage and frustration he takes out on Finn and Rey towards the end is because what you were saying, you think this might solidify his status as a villain. I thought actually it was where it didn't do what he wanted. I thought his rage towards the end was because he went through all this, he killed his father, and he still is consumed by these doubts. I found a really fascinating character arc there. And just how he plays that towards the end is amazing. Where he's just like pounding on his wound. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I think he was pretty much given a bigger arc in this movie than some of the characters from the original trilogy may have received across the whole thing. But yeah, I really do look forward to seeing where they decide to take him, because I think where they ended it with his character, you know, like you said, I mean, I didn't even think about it that way, as seeing it not really accomplish what he was hoping, and then knowing that he's going to be trained by Snoke. I think there's a lot of different ways they could go about it, and there's really cool things they could do regardless of wherever they take him. And that's one of the other things that I really liked about this movie, was just where it ends. It sets up so many possibilities for Episode 8. There are a lot of different ways they could take it, and I mean, I have fun just sitting down and thinking about, like, okay, so this is where this character was left off. They could go this way. Like, the possibilities really excite me with where they're deciding to take this trilogy for its second chapter and where they decide to end it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that last shot is one of the best shots in any Star Wars film. There's so much in how it closes on, well, first of all, with Mark Hamill, he wasn't the greatest actor in A New Hope. And to see where he's progressed as an actor, and what he does in his 15 seconds of screen time, silent screen time, is just the sad resignation he has when he turns around to look at her. Then like the horror and disgust when he sees the lightsaber. And then he kind of just calms down. There's just, his eyes tell 30 years worth of hardship and just in the face he gives her. It's amazing what he does in that screen time. I did not know Mark Hamill had it in him.
Yeah, it's incredibly impressive what you can do with just some changes in your facial expressions, and you're telling an entire story for a character. It's funny enough, that was actually one of my dislikes upon seeing it for the first time. I was like, really? You're only going to use him for 15 seconds? And then I saw it again. I was like, ah, but now, like, just the look on his face, like, what has this guy seen in the past 30 years that makes him look like this? So now it, by only showing me 15 seconds worth of him standing there with no lines, now I can't wait for episode 8 even more.
Yeah, and honestly, no story he could give would be as tragic as that look on his face. So I think it's good it ended on that. It's just because it leaves our imagination for a year or 2 years to just what happened to him? Why is he like this? I love it. I love how it ends. But I gotta go back and talk about Daisy Ridley and John Boyega a bit more. These characters, they pulse with energy and life. Just every scene they are in, there is so much personality into how their characters act. We understand, and there's even all of their silent moments, there's something going on in their eyes. I love the energy and chemistry they have together, as both characters who really had no friends up till now, who are kind of driven together through a series of mishaps and then joined together kind of with a common cause. And I think I love these two fairly innocent characters who find a friendship and then go out into the world together and have to fight for each other. And there's a moment towards the end where as they're going around planting the charges on Starkiller Base, it's not even mentioned at all, but as they every time they're going in and out of these buildings in the snow, every time we cut to the next scene, a different one is wearing Poe's jacket. It's like it's not. There's no attention given to it. It's just a detail in the background. You can see they're trading off the jacket in between each other as they go outside. It's just these little beautiful character moments that say so much about them. It's just that's what I love about J.J. Abrams. He gives characters. He takes every opportunity to give characters something to do in every scene that informs who they are and makes them feel that much deeper.
Yeah, I actually haven't even noticed that. It just makes me like him as a director even more.
Yeah, and there's also a really funny scene where as they get back into the elevator, Chewbacca kind of hands Han Solo his jacket. Like he's like kind of mothering him. It's really funny.
Yeah, and just on the subject of Chewbacca, Chewbacca has almost made more of a character in this movie than he ever has been. He has, in my opinion, his by far funniest moments in this movie, especially whenever his wound was being tended to. And he's kind of playing up the hardship that he's been in, trying to act out like he's this big hero. I mean, he is a hero, but just his kind of cocky demeanor as he was talking to the nurse.
Yeah. I want a movie just on that nurse.
It would be entertaining.
She does so much in her 5 seconds of screen time. It's so funny. Let's see what else. All right, so we might as well deal with some of the criticisms, some of which do have some pretty significant merit, as in structurally, this film takes a lot of cues from A New Hope. You could even say it rips off some of it pretty whole cloth. You know, starting out on a desert planet, a droid with important information, they meet Han Solo, they go find the rebels, and they blow up a Death Star. Yeah, I will admit that the structure is very, very reminiscent of A New Hope. But for me, I really don't care, because every second of this film is so lovingly crafted. Every actor is doing everything they possibly can to make this a great movie. And it is so just exciting and engaging. The story never lags. It's always well-paced. And honestly, I think this is, if it hadn't been for the recycled plot elements, this would have been absolutely a better movie than A New Hope.
I think if you were to look at the two films in a vacuum, as if, you know, which one came first is irrelevant. If you're just to critically analyze both movies, I think The Force Awakens is the better movie. It just feels more competently directed. I think it has a better sense of forward momentum as it continues. I think sometimes A New Hope kind of starts to drag a little bit.
And just the acting, characters, and script is a whole other level.
Yeah, that's the big thing I think that sets the two apart. This was the first major, like, huge roles for a lot of the cast of A New Hope. George Lucas, by his own admittance, isn't a great writer. I think the writing in The Force Awakens is far and away better than A New Hope. The cast is at where they are, comparing them now to comparing the original cast of A New Hope. They're better actors right now than they were. So not only are they working with a better script, but they're just delivering their lines better. Yeah. So, and I think the characters are provided more depth than A New Hope gave. Not quite as much. There's not quite as big of a difference, I think, in the depth that the characters are given when, you know, in regard to the huge gap I think there is between the acting ability and writing. But even so, I think Rey is a more compelling character in this movie than Luke was in A New Hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in his limited screen time, Poe is a more compelling character than anyone in those movies. So it's just, there is so much just life and energy in every frame of this film. I don't think, if you care about filmmaking, you can't ignore that. Yes, originality is good, but I think plot structure is something that, I mean, 90% of films follow a very linear plot structure and action films, I mean, there's only like a couple actual plots. It's just different events kind of changed around. So I don't think having a similar plot is the worst thing you can do. Yes, another Death Star. That was pretty lazy. I think they do deserve some notches taken away for that. But ultimately, a film is an experience, and when you have every level of this film as well crafted, as lovingly put together, I don't think you can just overlook that because, oh, it's another Death Star. I think it's a really shallow way of looking at filmmaking.
Yeah, I think it, to just write the movie off because of its similarities to A New Hope is just kind of lazy criticism, because that essentially means you are overlooking the camera work. You're overlooking the pacing of the film. You're overlooking the set design, just the quality that every other department in this movie has. So to just say, yeah, I don't like it because it has a Death Star at the end. To me, it's to overlook
the characters and their arcs and all the stuff that actually connects you to a film.
Exactly, because, I mean, structurally, is it similar? Yes. It starts off with a droid on a desert planet with information and ends in a Death Star blowing up. But the motivations behind the actions are different. You know, Rey's motivations are not Luke's at all. You don't have a character in A New Hope that's similar to Finn in any way. You know, we didn't have a character who is in the rebellion that made us care about them the way we have Poe, who is in the resistance, that makes us care about the resistance now. Darth Vader was given almost no depth as a villain. We have no idea why he's a villain, and yet we know exactly where Kylo Ren is coming from. We understand his character. So even though, yeah, it follows a similar structure, what's actually happening within that structure is completely different. And it's...
And superior.
Yeah, it's done in a way that I feel comfortable saying is in an objectively better way.
Yeah. So is there anything else you want to mention before we start winding down?
Well, there's a couple other dislikes that I did want to mention. My biggest complaint, other than reusing the Death Star, is there is presumably a lot that happened between this movie and Return of the Jedi, and I feel like this movie gives us very little. We don't really know the state of the Senate or the Resistance and how it came to be. We have no idea what the First Order is, really. We don't know what their resources are, how they came to be. We don't really know which one has more control of the galaxy. I feel like there's a lot of exposition and explanation as to what all these new characters and all these new factions are, and we're not really given a lot to work with. And I understand maybe that's because they're holding things back, but I think if we're following characters who are joining the Resistance, we need to know really what the Resistance is, what it was born out of. I just feel like overall it didn't add to the lore of Star Wars in a really meaningful way, and as much as the prequels got wrong, I think that that's something that they really did do. It showed us, you know, what the Republic was like in its heyday. It showed us what a galaxy full of Jedis was like. It told us new things. It added lore, and ultimately this movie, as much as I like it and I think it's easily better than the prequels, it doesn't add to the lore, I feel like, in a truly meaningful way.
Which is why everyone hated the prequels, for some reason.
Yeah, which is weird, because the politics was by far the... Or, not, sorry. The politics is far from the worst thing about those. In fact, I actually enjoy the politics of that movie. It's the writing and acting that destroys those movies, because there's a lot of good ideas in them.
Yeah, there's a very deliberate departure from anything that could be viewed as prequels-ish. And I think at times, definitely a lot of the time is to this film's credit. But I think there are some cues they could have taken that definitely would have been to the an asset to this film. Oh yeah, something I forgot to mention is the lightsaber fight in the end. I'm torn on that. On one hand, I very much miss the elegant, very classically shot, beautifully choreographed lightsaber fights from the prequels. But on the other hand, I love this fight, because there is so much just rage and emotion in both these characters, and the choreography, there's not much. Neither of them are terribly good sword fighters, and that's intentional. But So there's not like a lot to analyze, but just the way they just swing and hack at each other, and how emotionally distraught both of them are. And then the arc Ray's character goes on in the midst of that fight. Well, I mean, just the moment when Kylo Ren reaches and starts pulling the lightsaber, and then it flies past him, because you've completely forgotten about Ray at this point. He just took out Finn, and then she catches it. Oh, that's one of the best moments in any Star Wars film ever. It's just so powerful. And I also love the moment towards the end where he's got her cornered, and then he kind of stupidly reminds her about the Force. She kind of forgotten the heat of the fight, and she kind of just takes three seconds. She just kind of quiets and centers herself, and then kind of rallies the Force and then defeats him. It's so well crafted as a fight scene that I can forgive the lack of choreography.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think it would be a worse scene if it was choreographed, because I mean she knows how to handle herself in a fight, but she's never had a lightsaber before, and she's probably never fought under the emotional state that she was in at that point in her life. So to just kind of have them hack at each other, it felt more appropriate for the movie, like where it was in the story. To me, it was almost reminiscent of the fight from Empire Strikes Back, where Luke essentially, if he had any knowledge of how to properly fight with a lightsaber, it went out the window, because he just charges Vader, and he's just trying to hit him as hard as he can with no real, I guess, choreography or any sort of sense that he knows what he's doing in that moment. Mm-hmm. So I like the fight. I think it's shot incredibly. The way they utilize the lightsaber shining on the snow makes it one of the most iconic looking fight scenes in the series.
Yeah, the lightsabers are so much brighter, like the blue and red on their faces.
This is by
so
far
so striking.
Yeah, I think this is by far the best the lightsabers have ever looked.
Yeah, and they feel dangerous, and even more dangerous than they've been in the previous films. I think it's a bit of the sound and some of the lighting, but just every hit you cringe, because there's like an explosion of sparks, and you feel like these things feel so dangerous to be holding. I think that's a really neat touch that J.J. Abrams brought to it.
Although I guess we're supposed to still be on our negatives. I've got
who cares? Just,
yeah, I mean, there's, in my opinion, there's not a whole lot in this movie. But the last few things that I wanted to mention was this scene this film, like Rogue One, I think has another scene that's not really necessary, and unfortunately, it's a lot longer in this one. And that's the scene where they're fleeing from this giant monster that. I'm forgetting on the name of this monster that Han Solo was...
Rathtar.
It's not a necessarily bad scene. It does one of the things that I hate movies doing, which is we see the monster just really going through all of these expendable characters, and the second it gets its hands around a main cast, for whatever reason, it decides, hey, I'm just going to walk holding you, as opposed to killing you like I've done with all of these other people.
I love how that's resolved. The her saving him, and then, oh, that was lucky. It's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, at least they acknowledge it. Yeah, but for me, that it's kind of an extended sequence that doesn't really do a whole lot. I mean, it adds another fun action scene, but I don't know. The monsters themselves, I'm not really a fan of its design. I don't think it fits in incredibly well with the rest of the monsters of the universe, and usually whenever big creatures are introduced to Star Wars, it's like you feel like you're seeing a new entry into, you know, pop culture. You know, people know the Rancor, like that shot of the gate coming up and him slowly walking out, like that is an iconic moment that will go down in history. And you know, we have the effects to make something that could dwarf the Rancor in terms of just how cool it looks, and we just kind of got this CGI blob with some tentacles coming off it. I wasn't really a fan of the sequence as a whole.
As a scene, I have absolutely no complaints. I think it's a really fun action scene, but yeah, I think structurally it could have been cut out. But I love the Han Solo moment leading up to it, where he's trying to talk his way out with the two clans on either side. It's so much fun. It's definitely classic Han Solo.
Yeah, I think there could have been a way to keep that scene without having to do this just monster chase scene. Because I think he gets some of his best dialogue in that, where he says, "What I forget what he said entirely, but it was something to the effect of, you know, when have I never paid you back?" And then they give examples, and it's like, "Well, name two times." Like, it felt
I never very made much a like, deal with Kanja Club. Tell that to Kanja Club.
See, it instantly took me back to Han Solo, at least the Han Solo that I remembered. That was one of my big fears, was that, you know, he's been away from this character for quite a long time, and so is he really going to be able to have the attitude that Han Solo had? And I think he steps back into the role perfectly. So it was really, I really did like that scene. But a character that I don't feel like stepped back, and it's unfortunate, it's not a huge critique of mine at all, but I don't feel like Leia's return was quite as big and meaningful as I wanted it to be. Part of that, I feel like, is because she was given some weird lines. And another is, I don't like where they ended up taking their relationship. We end them feeling like they're going to get together, which we find out they did. But it felt like a very positive ending in Return of the Jedi. So to find out that they have a kid together, and then the kid goes villain, or the kid becomes a villain, and now Han Solo just up and leaves to go back to being a traitor, it feels very far from where I wanted to see their characters at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It seemed like a reason that was put together really quickly so that we could have this reunion. Like, oh, this is the first time they've seen each other for quite a while. And I don't really understand the need to have had the characters be separated from each other so that we as the audience can see their reunion. I would have probably rather to been introduced to the characters as if they've, you know, continued with each other over the 30 years. So, I don't know. I think I'm hopeful that her character will be better in episode 8 and Carrie Fisher's just able to do more. But her character really, it didn't have the impact that, you know, seeing Han or even Luke's 15 seconds of return, it didn't quite have the impact that I wanted it to have. And another thing, I love the scene of Han dying. I think that's really well done, but I don't like the aftermath of it. I think that as much as I do love the new cast, I think that by focusing on Daisy Ridley after the death didn't really work that well. Having her go up and hug Leia as opposed to Chewie hugging Leia, I think that would have been far more meaningful, because it's been Han and Chewie for the entirety of Star Wars, at least the original trilogy. And so other than just Chewie growling really loudly after Han dies, we don't get anything with him. And so I think that they could have capitalized on the death in a more meaningful way by focusing on Chewie and Leia, because we know that those are the two characters who have a history. Having Leia hug Rey seems kind of random, because Rey has no real connection with Han. She hasn't known him for a really long time, and so it just felt weird.
That's interesting. I actually took that. I agree we should have gotten a bit more from Chewie, but I like, because essentially Rey is the main character of this film, and I like the idea of the two Force users, the people who are connected to the Force, kind of finding each other in a crowd and comforting each other after a loss. And I think it is a loss to Rey. You can tell she's definitely been a loner on the planet, on Jakku, but not by choice. She definitely, you can tell how lonely she is and how eager she is to have friends and to be a part of something. So I think Han kind of taking her under his wing and offering her the job, I think it meant a lot to her as a kid, her and kind of, it gave her the prospect of a future better than she could have ever dreamed of. And so I think kind of taking that away in such a horrible, violent fashion, I think it definitely would affect her. And I do like the moment where they kind of hug. I think as both people connected to the Force and also connected to Han Solo, I thought it worked.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't horrible. It's just, you know, what you said at the beginning, you know, she is the main character of the film. But to me, it felt like that's exactly why she hugged Leia. It wasn't a story element. It's because this is ultimately Rey is the film's protagonist. So in my mind, even though it makes more sense for me, for Leia to seek out Chewie, who she has a far stronger connection with, for her to seek out, I mean, I didn't really think about that. You know, they're both sensitive in the Force, so perhaps they did feel something in the Force together and they were drawn together in that crowd. But for me, it just seeing them hug, it didn't mean anything incredibly much to me. I would have much rather have had Chewie comfort Leia, and in return Leia being, you know, comforting Chewie. Because like I said, these are the characters that we spent those three movies with, and so to have one of them be taken and then have the aftermath, the kind of display of sorrow, be shared by this new character who, I mean, definitely has that connection with Han. Han was going to be essentially her way out of that kind of life. It still felt a little less meaningful, I think, to me. But it's a small criticism. It's nothing huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's about time to start wrapping up. You want to just go ahead with your final thoughts of this film?
Yeah, overall, this is probably my second favorite. I think Empire still holds that number one spot. And while I do love Rogue One, I think that The Force Awakens gives its characters a lot more to work with. I think the actors in Rogue One did the very best with what they were given, but because it's an ensemble, you know, some characters have very limited dialogue. And with this, because we're focusing on a smaller cast, and because this movie is more about a journey where there's less just nonstop action beats and it's less focused on a particular mission, we're following these characters as they learn about all these new things, and it just gives the actors and the characters more chance to show their depth and their range. And overall, I think ultimately that is this movie's strongest asset, are these new characters. And because they got that so perfect, I can't help but love this movie. And because I think they got these characters so perfect, I think it easily allows this movie to stand up among the best of the Star Wars films, even with all its similarities. It does enough differently to separate itself, and what it does get right, it gets incredibly right. There's nothing that's just kind of good about this movie. If it is good, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I think coming back to Star Wars after what would have been, 11 years since, or 10 years since Revenge of the Sith, and the mixed reception those films had, and the amount of hype and what this film had to accomplish to even meet baseline expectations and what it did with that, there's a reason the whole world lost their minds when this movie came out. It deserved it. It took all of the nostalgia that we have for the originals and played it just right. Well, aside from stealing the plot, it played it just right. And it gave us it. And people say it didn't do anything new. I could not disagree more. It gave us a new cast that, as we said before, I think is stronger than the original cast was. Better developed. The script, I think, is. Yeah. If there's one thing J.J. Abrams is good at, is the characters. And all throughout, the characters are always front and center in every action beat. It's always moving forward. Structurally, this film is almost perfect. There's no dead air. It's always moving. It's always just propulsive. The action scenes are incredible. Aside from the structural issues of rehashing, there are literally almost like no flaws in this film. And that's for a sci-fi blockbuster. That's incredible. They're very difficult to make, and I think J.J. Abrams made something very special with this movie. I love this movie. I think it is also my second favorite. I would put A New Hope a little higher, just because I think it did it first, and I have a couple issues with The Empire Strikes Back. So I would put this also put this my as my second favorite Star Wars film. But if it hadn't been for those issues, it would far and away be my favorite Star Wars movie. I can understand if you didn't like this movie, just if you think it ripped off A New Hope. But I think if you care about filmmaking, there is so much to love in this movie. In every frame, there's just the craftsmanship here on display is so admirable, and I really think it deserves another chance.
Yeah, it might just be, in terms of objective criticism, the most competently made of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's about time to start wrapping up. Yeah, I hope if you didn't like this film beforehand, I hope we gave you some stuff to think about. And if you already liked it, I hope we helped you come away loving it even more. And so before we close, I'd like to ask you, if you enjoy this podcast, to please go and rate and review us on iTunes. It doesn't have to be a lot. Just a couple words and a 5-star review would definitely help people find us, and it would bump us up in the rankings. It'd be hugely appreciated. And also, like us on Facebook. That's where we do most of our interaction with you guys. We love talking with you on the page. If you have any suggestions of films you think are underrated that you'd like us to review, definitely go up, suggest them there. And our website is underratedpodcast.com.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are underrated_pod. We also have an email, which is theunderratedpodcast@gmail.com. So whichever way you want to contact us, if you do, whichever way is the easiest for you, we'd love to continue to contact with our fans or anybody listening.
Yeah, definitely. So we hope you enjoyed this retrospective review of The Force Awakens, and we will see you later.